Just behave yourselves and act like men.
Now you start using your head. That's not love. That's 3 feet above your ass.
People will come, Ray.
All right, don't try to strike everybody out. Strikeouts are boring. Besides that, they're fascist.
We don't stink right now.
You play ball like a girl!
You're out of here!
There's no crying in baseball!
High fly ball into right field. She is gone!
This is West Coast Bias.
Dynamite drop in, Monty. That broadcast school has really paid off.
Oh yeah, let's get this show on the road. We are back.
We are back after a long hiatus.
It was a hiatus.
It was a hiatus. Well, you almost got blown
without
away
warning.
Yourself, but
we do apologize. I did. Yeah, the show could have been permanently erased, but I survived the hurricane. We are back in the sunny West Coast, ready to get biased. I am.
Yes.
You know, summer is just starting for.
Only one city
in the country, and that is San Francisco. So we are getting a little warm again. It's always warm in here. It's always hot in this
studio. Unless we do have that beautiful, cool fog that we had for a nice couple of months this year.
Right. That's when everybody else is sweating and toiling away. We are nice and cool. However, now our summer begins, but it is really getting heated up. For this postseason race, man, last year the National League West last year was just gone. It was kind of like the American League Central this year, which the Indians have already
American
clinched.
League East.
Well, the American League East is still up for grabs. It has not been clinched yet, but at least not at the time of this recording. But the Central is done. It's finished. Tribe secured that with a 15-0 rout of the Tigers. Giving them the club's 10th title since 1994, when the current three-division system was established. It's the most of any team in the AL Central. The current run of titles marks the first time the Indians have won at least three straight since 1995 to 1999. They have a winning record, 6 years running. They're doing pretty good.
Good for the Indians.
Yeah. But do they have enough? Do they have enough, as we saw them, you know, kind of falter, actually really falter last postseason, and they seem like, can Cleveland be Believeland? I hate to see. I couldn't, like, my brain wouldn't even let me say Believeland.
Poor Cleveland, you know, they've been titleless for so long. Finally, the Cleveland Cavaliers.
Yeah, see, even you can't say
and it ended their suffering a couple years ago for the NBA, but still nothing for baseball, football. Cleveland's been long suffering. I believe they have the longest active drought for World Series win.
Is it just World Series or is it all professional sports?
No, it can't be all professional sports because the Cavs years ago. But
that makes sense. Yeah, definitely for baseball though. That's for sure. But hey, you know, is it their year? Probably not. We'll see. Looks like the A's are gonna have something to say about that.
The A's will definitely have something to say for that. The A's are playing some really good baseball, and it's been a lot of fun to watch. Unlike the team across the bay, which seems to have lost all fights.
Oh, there's another team.
Extremely tough to watch.
I thought there's only one team in the bay. I guess there's only one team that's actually playing in the Bay. But, hey, the A's are looking great. At least they got 90 wins. What do they have, 91 wins? They're looking pretty tough, man. They have 90 wins. Maybe after today they'll have 91. Astros have 93. So, you know, the A's are 3.5 back and 1.5 back for the first AL wild card. And they lead Seattle by 7.5 again as of... Yeah. Today, Saturday,
as of this
or Sunday.
Yeah.
Today's Sunday, the 16th. Yeah.
The Seattle Mariners are 4 games away from being eliminated.
Right. You know, they can play spoiler a little bit. Not unlike the other team in the Bay, that has the Dodgers the last three games of the season. Now, usually, or at least the last half a decade, we've seemed to be playing each other in the last series, and it doesn't seem to really matter because usually the Dodgers have clinched by then. This year, you know, it's Dodgers are in first place currently, but only by a half a game. So, and they do have to play Colorado, and I do believe the Giants are playing Colorado again today, and they shut them out two games in a row. So I'm actually rooting right now for the Giants tentatively.
Tentative. Well, I would say you're probably more rooting against the Rockies than you are rooting for the Giants.
For sure. Yeah. I mean, I'm not going to go to the game. But, hey, the Rockies don't seem to do well here. There's something about the extremes. You know, they go from the most extreme hitting friendly park to the most extreme pitching friendly park. And, unless your name is Trevor Story or Nolan Arenado, you're not going to be faring so well here. Man, Trevor Story. I was kind of sleeping on him. I didn't realize how good he was doing. He is arguably the leader for the NL MVP all of a sudden. It's not all of a sudden. Like, that's the thing. And I know he gets the, you know, that Rockies players don't get a lot of respect. Again, I'm looking at Arenado, who's, I mean, easily the best third baseman in the last 30 years. The trick with the
Rockies, of course, they have a huge offensive advantage at home. You really do have to look at their away splits.
But they do put up, you know, not unlike the Arizona Diamondbacks before they had the humidor. They're actually putting up more runs on the road. Now, the Rockies, I don't know if those numbers are the same, but they, you know, they still do. Like, Arenado's splits are equal to on the road.
Yeah, Arenado's a great player, and it has been for many years.
Right. Yeah, it's so, you know, but you're right. I think that's usually why the Rockies players do kind of get overlooked, right?
Well, that and the small market, and no one really pays attention to them. They've been in the league now for 25 years and have not won the division yet. Wow. They've made it to the World
Series.
But they have not won a division.
But not
won
a division.
Right.
Wow. That is pretty insane. A lot of people are talking about Javier Baez possibly as the National League MVP. But honestly, look, Baez is having a great year. Okay. But Story, I don't know. I guess Baez plays two positions. Story only plays shortstop, but still. You know, that's not easy.
It also comes down to how you describe an MVP. Well, one thing that I became aware of this past week was how much of a different team the Dodgers are with Turner in the lineup versus without.
100%. They need Turner. Turner is fulcrum in the middle of that lineup.
There's something about that red beard, perhaps. I don't know what it is. They are a very different team with him in the lineup versus without.
It's
remarkable, which would say that Turner is the MVP for the Dodgers, if no other reasons, is because they are such a better team with him there.
Way better. I mean, you remember how slow the Dodgers started off the season because Turner was on the DL for a month and a half.
I had a lot of Dodger fans very worried about the season.
Well, I wasn't worried, but I was telling you. I was like, no, we're fine. I mean, actually, go back to week one or week two or three. All right. Go back to the episodes. I don't think there was a hint of fear in my voice, but I could be wrong. Look, Story has leading all the National League in doubles. He's leading all of the National League in total bases. He's right up there with hits. I mean, you know, obviously home runs. I don't know. He's got 33 home runs.
Arenado's
34. Matt Carpenter still has 35. It's crazy. He's still leading the National League.
You're
to tell me Matt
Carpenter.
No, he is. That's the thing. I just didn't realize. Story has 102 RBIs already. I mean, Baez has 103. But I don't know. But, you know, as somebody else, though, that, speaking of slow starts, how about Goldschmidt, man? Goldschmidt somehow got his average up to 299 as of today. He's leading all of the National League in OPS.
Yeah.
957. He's leading all the National League.
Guy
That's
can
insane.
Hit. The guy
you,
can hit.
You could hit well under the Mendoza line. You could hit under 200 for the first month or two. and then get your average up to probably 300.
So what was it? What clicked? Do we know anything about what happened with Goldschmidt this year that all of a sudden he just sort of like clicked? Was he hurt? Was he thinking about something else?
He's too good to be that bad that long. So it's really
just a law of averages?
I think so, but it was also, you know, and we talked about this a little bit, and I was watching some of those games early in the season, and he didn't have the bat stance that he always had. It looked like he was trying something new. Like, and you know, guys do this from time to time, but maybe he stuck with it a little longer than he should have. That's from, you know, the naked eye, from me, I guess, watching it. Somebody that doesn't watch a lot of Arizona games unless, you know, they're playing the Dodgers or maybe a key member of my fantasy team. But I feel like I still watch a good amount of Arizona games, and it seemed like for the first couple months, every time Goldschmidt was at bat, he didn't look like Goldschmidt. You know, Goldschmidt kind of has like a, it's almost like a Buster Posey kind of stance. You know, he really bends his knees, and then he like lays the bat down. It's almost like below the horizon. It's like down against his back, you know. But he wasn't doing that. He had that like above his shoulder for the first like 6 weeks, I want to say. And he wasn't hitting shit. He was late on fastballs. Like, I mean, come on. He's like one of the greatest hitters in the last 20
years. A lot of times that sloppy look with the bat at the beginning is more of a timing mechanism than anything else.
100%.
I mean, a lot of pitching instructors or hitting instructors, I should say, advocate having that bat up in a ready position.
Yeah.
Because you're going to be quicker to the ball and your swing, but that works for a lot of guys, but for some don't.
Exactly. And Goldschmidt was, you know, always in the top three of MVP, at least the last like 5 years, doing that, what he did normally. And then he switched it a little bit and then boom, he was an under 200 hitter.
Which begs the question, if he hadn't spent so long experimenting with this new stance, what would his stats be like?
Yeah, would he be? He might be a clear favorite. Because when we're talking about, you know, Baez's and Story's full stat line really wouldn't normally be MVP caliber seasons in most seasons. But this year, the National League, you know, it's a lot tougher, man. That's right now, Scooter Jeanette, of all people, are leading the National League in batting average. I mean, it's a weird season. But Yelich and Lorenzo Cain, honestly, also have, I don't know about Cain so much, but defensively, certainly. But Yelich, I think he's leading all the National League in offensive war also. Yeah, 5.4. Wow. Goldie's 5.3, Trevor Story 5.0, right on the money. But, you know, Yelich is sort of quietly figuring out how to hit home runs, and plus he also always, you know, hits a lot of base hits, and he's leading, or he's second in all of batting average. I don't know. It'll be very interesting.
Bodes well for Milwaukee down the stretch. 2 weeks left, and they're just 2.5 games behind the Cubs.
I'm rooting for them, honestly. They.
I'd love to see the Brewers slide in there.
I just want to hear Euchre in a few postseason games also, you know. Where's the booze? it would be nice, and also, you know, the Cubs, I feel more confident that the Dodgers can beat the Cubs, just because they know them so well, but, you know. I don't know.
Where's the boots?
Thank you, Yuke.
There we go. We got a little Yuke in there. but how about Cy Young? Cy Young's looking really interesting, too, right now.
Cy Young is. We actually have...
as we speak, there's...
On a battle of potential Cy Young candidates. So you got Jacob deGrom versus Chris Sale. The first time since apparently 1985 there's been a meeting of pitchers with a sub-2 ERA with over 100 innings pitched.
Really? First time since in 33 years? It's pretty insane. Sub-2 ERA. It is kind of rare for there to even be two pitchers, I guess, in the same league. Well, I guess they're not in the same league, but just in baseball that have a sub-2 ERA. So that was Dwight Gooden and...
John Tudor.
All right, well... Dwight Gooden, yeah, sure, that makes sense. I don't really know John Tudor.
I don't either. 1985, I was, you know, like 8.
But I'm assuming in 30 years from now, unless something drastically happens to either of these pitchers, we'll remember Chris Sale and we'll remember Jacob deGrom.
Yeah, it's very likely.
Jacob DeGrom, his numbers aren't sexy. In fact, he has a losing record. He's 8-9.
Well, that's a side effect of being on the Mets this year.
Right, and hopefully the sort of slow changing tide of thought that is the Baseball Writers of America in how they determine not just MVPs, but Cy Youngs, Gold Gloves, whatever.
Hall of Fame.
At least for pitching, should be looking more at FIP than wins. Should be looking more at ERA than wins. Even strikeouts, if you want, more than wins.
Whip, strikeouts, ERA. Whip.
Yeah, exactly.
This tells the story of how effective a pitcher is.
Wins are the least important. Well, I mean, I get it. Like,
wins are more of a team stat.
Yeah, well, they're 100% a team stat. The pitcher can only, you know, do so much, you know. But anyway, but Max Scherzer has kind of, until his last start, which is actually pretty bad. His last start, I think his ERA rose 21 points. And that was tough. But when he allowed a season high 6 earned runs to Atlanta, I mean, but his ERA is still 2.53. And now third best behind DeGrom and Aaron Nola. But Aaron Nola has a 2.42 ERA, 201 strikeouts, 16-5. Scherzer has 277 strikeouts, 17-7. DeGrom, though, 8-9, 1.71 ERA, 239 strikeouts. Now, to me, that's the ultimate test for a pitcher. You know, if you can get a sub-2 ERA and have over 200 strikeouts and nobody else does, you're it. That's you, right?
Well, sure. And when we look on, I'm looking at the stats, the American League leader for wins this year is Snell for the Tampa Bay Rays. Yeah.
Snell has a good chance as well. In fact, he probably has the best chance, more so than Chris Sale.
Is that because of the wins?
Well, he also has a 2.03 ERA, if I'm not mistaken.
It's not too bad.
Yeah, he's hovering on that sub, too.
He also hits per 9 innings. Earned run average is leading with a 2.03.
No, well, Sale has a 1.9. Oh, I guess not after this. Did Sales go up today? Because he had a 1.96. But Sale,
it must have. He has given up 2 runs.
Well, it depends on how many innings he went today, because technically Sale isn't even eligible. I think he's right on the mark. You pretty much have to have...
For the ERA leader, it might be.
Or for any of the Cy Young stats. You basically have to have about 162 innings. You basically have to have about 1 inning pitch to 1 game played by the team to qualify. And no other pitcher in history has ever won, besides a reliever, a Cy Young, that had fewer than that. In fact, I think it's most of them are fewer than like 200. Fewest innings by a Cy Young Award starter was Clayton Kershaw with 198. Now, that's still way more. Well, 198 in the third. That was back in 2014. He was super dominant. That's still a lot more than 162. And I think they're playing like 150 games right now, and I think Sale's like at 150. And I don't know how many he started in this game. I thought they said that he was only going to start 3 innings. So that would put him over, but just barely, you know. And right. Sale did have a really dominant stretch, but...
I'm looking now at the earned run average leaders, so 1-5, and he's not on that list.
Right,
so
he's not
probably
eligible.
Isn't, yeah.
Yeah, because he did have a 1.96 going into today. It does look like the Mets put up 2 runs, but I'm pretty sure that was well after. So even if it is still, it's still 1.96, 12-4, 221 strikeouts. That's super dominant. It really is. But hey, look, Snell is 19-5, and he's on a bad team, right?
Right.
So there is almost
something.
Well,
they're not bad. I think they're about average. They're around 500.
He's on the Rays, right? The Rays, yeah. Tampa Bay's 500? All right. I didn't realize that.
Yeah, as of recording... Tampa Bay is actually 81-66.
Sorry, Tampa.
So not bad.
Almost as good as the
not bad, but you know they're behind the Yankees and the Red Sox this year, so they are already eliminated from playoff contention, being 20 games back behind the thing. But
if they were in the National League, they'd be the second wild card right now.
Yeah, well, and they're not in the National League, so.
I underestimated you, Tampa. I slept on you, Tampa. I'm sorry. I really haven't been paying attention.
They've got a 19-game winner. So. Yeah,
well, that helps. So, okay. So, you know what? So, okay. I'm going to go back on everything I just said about wins are bullshit. But in this case, Maybe, like, the inverse is true. Like, if you're on the worst team ever, then maybe that puts you... Well, again, I guess they're not the worst team ever. But in my mind, Tampa and the Orioles and the White Sox, I usually think of as, like, the worst teams in baseball. But I always forget about Kansas City. Kansas City's actually doing a lot worse than the White Sox. So, hey.
Yes, but not as bad as Baltimore this year.
Well, no, Baltimore. I actually wonder. Do you know what the record is
for as of right now at the time of this recording?
No, well, I know their record. They're like 42 and 106.
The all time record for losses in a season.
Yeah,
I don't know. That'd be interesting. I should look that up. I'll look that up right now.
It is. Okay. So it is minimum 120 games. The 1899 Cleveland Spiders owned the worst single season record of all time, and for all eras, finishing at 20-134. Now, but let's say modern era.
Since 1900?
Well, actually, this computes to a 21-141 if it's a 162 game. But it's, let's see. I guess the Philadelphia Athletics in 1919, 36-104. If you're looking a little bit later, and then the New York Mets, of course, the terrible Mets in 1962. 40 wins, 120 losses. So, you know, it's not unprecedented. I don't know if, well, they're certainly not going to be that bad. But, yeah, hey, look, they already have 42 wins, so they're definitely not going to break the record. But, anyway, they're still pretty terrible. But still, look, Snell, that is a huge hurdle to overcome. I don't know, because Trevor Bauer sort of fell off. He does have over 200 strikeouts. Corey Kluber will definitely have over 200 by the end of the season. He's 18-7, but his ERA is 2.91 right now. Trinan, though, you know, Blake Trinan for the A's, 37 saves, 0.85 ERA, and he's 7-2. He's got almost as many wins as DeGrom, and he's a reliever.
So just plugging in the most losses in MLB history. From 1900 to the present was the 1962 New York Mets with 120 losses. Yeah,
right. But, you know, again, the Philadelphia Athletics in 1919 technically have more, have a worse record, but in the in the modern era.
And then there was the 03 Tigers with 119 losses.
Yeah. Blake Trinan, I don't know. I don't really like relievers winning Cy Youngs myself. Unless your name is Eric Gagne, because there is something that's happening this year. I don't know if you've seen this, and I kind of you know, ruined it. I gave away the answer here, but Josh Hader may do something only one other relief pitcher in history ever has. Who was the most dominating relief pitcher ever, I ask you? I already told you the answer.
Let's see. Could it be Eric Gagne?
Ooh. Ding, ding, ding. Eric Gagne, 2003, the most dominating relief pitching season ever. 137 strikeouts, 37 hits. He had 100 more strikeouts than hits, 55 saves, that's all. Zero blown saves. I mean, can you imagine that?
That's probably the most impressive statistic in all of that right there is the zero blown saves.
Well, nowadays it seems like that. Back then it was, you would be like, you know, ruined. Nowadays, what was the Giants stat last time? This was like weeks ago and they had already blown, what, 25 saves or something you said?
Right.
Yeah, that's insane. And that was still like 2 months to go in the season. 0.24 ERA after the All-Star break, 0.32 ERA in save situations. He'll give up two runs the entire season
now,
in save situations.
Now, of course, the only question with that is how much did performance-enhancing drugs play
zero.
Into that?
Zero. 0%.
He is
0%.
Just like with Barry Bonds, right?
Well... Look,
but
look.
I will say, you know, I got to go to the Barry Bonds... jersey number retirement ceremony, AT&T Park, last month, and there was an appearance by none other than Eric Gagne.
Really? Because like, there's that one at bat.
He came out. Yeah, they showed that one at bat there because it was one of those impressive memories. If you were there, like I was at that game,
it was a
intense at bat. I mean, it was playoff atmosphere. Everyone was excited. Everyone was anticipating, and it did not disappoint.
Best pitcher against the best hitter. Yeah,
and
it's rare.
It is rare, and they went right after. So he came out and he acknowledged he waved to the crowd. He took the booze, the beat LA chants, and he waved to the crowd and had some very nice things to say about
LA. They played the Pirates, if I remember correctly. Anyway,
he had some nice things to say about Barry and about pitching in San Francisco and that particular at bat, and it was a great thing for sure.
For those of for those people that don't remember this at bat, please give me the rundown of what happened in this at bat.
Well, so it was the ninth inning of a game, and Eric Gagne came in. Barry Bonds was due up. There was nobody on base, and Gagne went right after Bonds, yeah. And
whereas everybody else would have just walked him.
Everyone else probably would have walked him, yeah. Or pitched around him, or
right.
Such was the time,
right?
And there was one pitch Bonds took. Second pitch was like 101 mile an hour. Fastball that Barry got around on and pulled foul into the water.
Splash hit.
Splash hit, foul, but foul.
Ball. Yeah.
And then the next pitch was almost, I think, a little bit faster. And he took just deep straightaway center field. It was a blast to remember. I'll find a clip. I'll post it up on our Facebook page. Yeah. A little bit later on today.
It's hard to watch, but there's somehow still our Giants fans out there, it is fun to watch, I guess.
It is a pretty epic at bat. It is very impressive.
So Eric Gagne, and I know the zero blown saves out of 55 is just insane, but the 137 strikeouts to 37 hits ratio is ridiculous. That is pure bananas. So, Josh Hader, right now, has 130 strikeouts and 30 hits. So, he's at that 100 mark right now. So, he could potentially be the only other guy that's ever done that.
He could also do a little bit better if he doesn't.
He could. Could he do 110? Could he do 115? I mean, really, anything north of 101 is just insane. Does he have five more in him? I mean, it's pretty much...
We still literally got 2 weeks left of games left. So
I think he has five more. If he gets five more strikeouts, he'll break the all-time record for most strikeouts in a season by any left-handed reliever who has ever lived. It's pretty insane.
That's an impressive stat there.
The current record is 134, and it stood for 44 years.
Who was that held by?
John Hiller, the 1974 Tigers. Just one slight difference, though, between these two seasons. Hiller gave up nearly 100 more hits. He gave up 127 hits. Hader's only given up 30. So, you know, it's not going to be as dominant as the Gagne season, but in that one aspect, it could be.
Right.
And he certainly will probably be the most dominant left-handed relief season of all time.
Did you find in that Hiller year how many innings pitched? Versus how many innings pitched that Hader has thrown?
We'll look at that. No, I don't have that off the top of my
head. Because that would be interesting because as a modern closer, Hader is only throwing one inning a game.
Right. And, you know, I guess you're right. Back then, maybe he was throwing more, and so he has more chances to give up hits. Is that what you're saying?
Yeah.
So was that 1974? Okay. 1974, let's see, 150 innings.
150 innings, okay.
And Josh Hader. Sorry, we don't have a an engineer today. In fact, we never have an engineer, so we got to look all this stuff up.
So, if you would like to be a podcast engineer.
Yes, I'm sorry. Yeah, exactly. Remember to email us at baseballshowpodcast@gmail.com. 2018, Josh Hader has 74 innings. Yeah,
yeah. So twice as many innings pitched by Heller. Still, you know, an impressive amount of strikeouts.
Exactly. If anything, it's that sort of negates the... Because he has so many more strikeouts and so fewer innings. The other guy has double the hits, he has double the innings, but he has the same amount of strikeouts and half the innings. So,
right.
If anything, that's almost more impressive.
This also speaks to the stuff that this guy Hader has.
Right. He's basically just getting a strikeout every time he's up. It's at least one, if not more like three. It's kind of insane.
Yeah.
So, we'll see. I know Hader is sort of... there's a lot of haters out there. I know that. He's... You know,
they just hate the hater heater.
Well, hey, that's true. A lot of haters hate the hater heater. That's okay. We're done with that.
No more alliterations.
No more quasi-racist alliterations. Okay. Alex Cora wins his 100th game. How about that? Maybe he's going to win another one tonight here. But anyway, I think he already has 101 wins, actually. But in the in his 146th game managing 100, because this is obviously his rookie season, he won his 100th game. So Bruce Bochy has managed 24 seasons in the big leagues. He's won 1900 games, more than any active manager. Clint Hurdle, Ned Yost, Ron Gardenhire, Bob Melvin have managed a combined 60 seasons in the big leagues. They've won more than 4500 games together. None of those managers have won 100 games in a single season. And then Alex Cora is coming in, his very first time, wins 100, or is gonna win way more than 100. Is that a fluke? Is it him? Is it the team?
It's
pretty impressive.
It is quite impressive, but the Red Sox have an insane team. They've got two or three players that are having career years.
They do.
There's no doubt.
And Mookie, but I think there's something though. The players like him because he's a player,
and that makes a difference for sure.
It's got to, yeah. No, it's true. Mookie Betts is nuts right now. He's going crazy. He leads all position players in WAR.
So 10.0.
Yeah,
it's pretty crazy.
Whereas Trout's 9.4 right now, but he's leading in batting average, .338. He's crazy, man. He's all over the place. How many home runs does he have? I don't know. Not quite 30, but still. I don't know. Anyway, I think it's Mookie's. Mookie should have won, I think, 2 years ago when Trout won. I still think Mookie had a better season. He's obviously, well, I don't know. If you lead batting average and you lead WAR, I don't know, and you have more than 25 home runs, I think he'll probably have 30 by the end of the season. It's just that his teammate, you know, JD, gets a lot of attention, and JD's putting up some insane numbers as well.
He does.
But, hey, he's just a DH. I like Jose Ramirez more than I like JD. I mean, really, Jose Ramirez is putting up some crazy numbers this year also. So is Lindor. I mean, hey, Lindor's got the most runs scored, right above Mookie, but still.
Right, and those two players, of course, were the subject of our trivia question last week, which we will get back
to.
That
is right. That's right. Yes, I'm spoiling everything today. I don't know what's going on. I'm giving away too much.
You didn't give away. You just gave away it was just a teaser for the upcoming segment.
That is true. So if you're a, and I know we get some heat because we talk about the East Coast too much, considering our name, but I know. The Red Sox fans still have to be sweating a little bit. Sure, they're going to have the best record in baseball, probably. But is Chris Sale going to be okay? Is he going to be able to start games? Or is he going to be sort of Andrew Miller-type super reliever role, which would be insanely dominant? But is that going to be enough for the Red Sox?
When we talk in the
postseason.
In the dawn of the era of the opener.
Right.
It would be quite the opener, pitch 2-3 innings,
No, 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 no. I don't mean Chris Sale as an opener. I mean Chris Sale as a like as a super starter. Middle wow. reliever, like well, Andrew sure. Miller has been. Because they have Sale, David Price, Rick Porcello, right? Is that enough? I don't think that's enough, man. So once they get into the postseason, is Sale going to even be ready? I don't know. So I thought Sale went on the deal the first time just because he always gets pretty bad the second half. You know, he's never as good the second half as he's the first half, at least historically in his career. So I figured it was just like a breather. I didn't think he was actually injured, but I think he's actually injured. I mean, you know, they're very tight-lipped about it. He's obviously pitched today, but I don't know, 2-3 innings today.
Well, there's something wrong if they're limiting his innings this much. And of course, the breaking news in this game is that Mookie Betts left with some soreness in his side.
Yeah, he made a throw to home plate, and then he left right afterwards. It was kind of a half-assed throw too, and Edwin Jackson was safe at home. But here we are, the bottom of the seventh inning, one out. DeGrom's still pitching.
He's got 3-3.
Yeah, tied 3-3. He wants this win. He's going to pitch till he gets a win. He's super pissed. I like DeGrom just because it's just terrible to be on such a bad team, you know, and to perform that well. It's just it's kind of brutal. So there's some questions with the Red Sox there. And, I mean, hey, if they put up 8 runs a game, I guess their starters can give up 6 or 7. But the Yankees, too. You know, we saw Aaron Judge is back. Sort of back.
Sort of? Sort of mean?
Sort of means he's only playing defense. He's not taking out bats yet. He's coming in late in the game to eat up a couple innings in the outfield. But he hasn't had an at-bat, and they're not going to let him take at-bats.
So, for the time being, it's going to be McCutchen going to be taking those at-bats for Judge in the first parts of the game.
And McCutchen made his very first appearance in left field. When Judge came in, they brought Judge in to play right. And, McCutchen has never played left in his entire career. I found that a little hard to believe.
He's always been a center fielder.
I know, but the last couple of years, he hasn't been a center fielder, you know. And then when he came to the Giants, I thought they at least started him once or twice in left. But I guess he was just keeping him in right.
Keeping him in right.
Yeah. Well, I mean, it makes sense. But, you know, but the Yankees don't seem to be as in much trouble because they do have Severino, Tanaka, Happ. Looking pretty good, but Stanton is not Stanton. What is he hit? He's hitting like 130 or something in the month of September. It's pretty terrible. So Aaron Judge is kind of like the Justin Turner in that lineup. Would that be a fair statement? He is sort of the jump starter in that lineup. When Judge is in there, the Yankees play better. When Judge is out, the Yankees play like garbage. So,
well, it could very well be. They did definitely struggle when Judge was out.
So basically, what I'm saying is the A's are going to win the pennant.
That's what you're saying. All right, I'll go for that. We're gonna have an AL championship game of the A's versus Indians. You calling it now?
That sounds pretty good. How about A's versus Boston? Just to. You know, make the rest of the country happy. Because, I mean, come on, Cleveland, who cares? Nobody really cares.
Well, I like
Cleveland better as a team.
It's going to be like the NBA the last few years. It's going to be Cleveland, Golden State, Oakland.
Oh, yeah. We're not going to see that again anytime soon. That's for sure. That's for sure. I know. Yeah. It does make traffic kind of unbearable out there.
Well, especially now with football season and the Raiders mucking things up as well.
Of course. Luckily, this is their last year here, so we won't have that football crowd next year. But
perhaps.
What do you mean perhaps? Well, you don't think they're moving to Vegas?
Well, they're moving to Vegas, but their new digs in Vegas isn't ready for next season. And this
I thought it was next season. That's 20. Yeah, I thought it was next year.
2019, I thought they were going for 2020. They said really? 2 years left in Oakland. It's all sort of
I thought that was
weird.
A year ago, though. They said 2 years.
Doesn't matter. It's football.
Who cares? Yeah, exactly. Who gives a shit? It's fine. So, look, the Yankees' bullpen is insane. But the A's bullpen is somehow even better. Even though they don't have the sexy names like, you know, Chad Green and Betances and Britton and Chapman.
And the A's pitching staff in general has been pretty piecemeal all year. They've started so many different players. They have had so many injuries in their pitching staff.
That's true. We didn't even get on the fact that Sean Manaea is out for the season. Arthroscopic surgery in the shoulder. And they're saying he might be out for all of next season, too.
Well, it's very unfortunate because he was doing great this year.
Mr. No-No. The only no-hitter on the West Coast. Right? Correct me if I'm wrong. BaseballShowPodcast@gmail.com. I'm not 100% sure. I'm pretty sure, though. And that was pretty early in the season. Now, Sean Manaea isn't an elite pitcher, but he's definitely a great starter. Guy can go 6, 7, 8 innings.
Yeah.
Obviously, that's, nine.
That's what you're looking for in this day and age.
So I guess it's going to be Mike Fiers, right? I mean, he'll probably be getting the start.
It's looking that way.
Is Trevor Cahill still making starts over there? Because his... When Cahill pitches in Oakland...
Cahill in Oakland, yes.
Yeah, he is nuts. So maybe if Oakland does... Okay, so let's say Oakland doesn't win the West, even though they're only 3.5 games back. There's still a good chance. But if they do win the top seed for the wild card, they will be at home, and the Yankees play terribly in Oakland. And that's a huge... Those are both very, very huge home field advantages, you know.
Yeah.
If you don't play Oakland well, you're going to die. Like, that place is horrible to hit home runs, right? And if you don't have Judge, I mean, Judge might be ready by the postseason, but maybe not by that first wild card game. But the A's have the leader in all of both leagues in home runs, Chris Davis. And he just... That guy's like my size. I mean, he's got 30 pounds more muscle than me, but still, like,
he's got power.
That guy mashes, man. And if you've ever seen him hit them there, too, it's just those balls disappear. It's insane. I've seen Miguel Cabrera hit home runs there. I've seen a lot of people hit home runs there, but when Chris Davis hits it, I guess it's probably like what it looks like to see Altuve hit a home run. It's just, he's not as small as Altuve. But when Altuve hits a home run, it looks like it doesn't even make sense. Like, the ball just looks so much faster off of his bat because he's so little. But anyway. No disrespect, Chris. I know you're not 5'6", all right, but still, that's a huge advantage, especially if you're used to playing that park. Plus, there's a lot of foul ball territory in
the absolutely the most in Major League,
which is a huge advantage. Also,
and they've done some things to cut some of that out, but it's just like huge. Massive.
It's like a cricket field. I don't know what a cricket field looks like, but, you know.
Well, it's because it's a multi-use stadium, always has been, so they got to have room for that gridiron to go across the field.
Right.
Which is no good for either team, because then the football players got to play on the infield dirt, and then the baseball team's got to play on all the torn-up grass that is there.
And old paint and everything, yeah. That's true. So... Look, there's still this late in the season, especially even when one team has already clinched, there's still so many variables, so much that's up in the air. Now, you're most excited about possibly the Giants playing spoiler against the Dodgers.
Well, that's the only thing that is really worth, you know, going to the last couple of games I got tickets for is to, well, see them keep the Dodgers out of the postseason.
Dodgers have a key series today. I mean, they could finish it off by beating St. Louis today, and the Giants can beat the Rockies,
right,
which would be very helpful. But September 24th through the 26th, they're at Arizona, and this coming Wednesday, Monday through Wednesday, they're playing Colorado. So there's a lot of...
That'll be a pivotal series for sure.
Oh, the next few weeks, like, pretty much every game now really matters. I haven't...
Yeah.
I've had the luxury as a Dodger fan to not be worried at all mid-September. I'm like, all right, yeah, we're going to clinch in a day or two. It's no big deal. But this year...
This year, there's the exact opposite of last year.
Yeah, where there's three...
You're watching the scoreboard this year.
Yeah, unfortunately, I know. Yeah. Well, okay, well, we'll see. You know, the Chicago has a... What?
2.5 game lead over Milwaukee?
Yeah. And the Cardinals are still knocking on the door, too. They're... You know, 81-68 also. So they're right there. Them, the Dodgers, Colorado. But
they're not totally done yet, but they've got to be able to beat the Dodgers.
They do, and they are playing the Dodgers September 17th through the 19th. And they're playing Atlanta the 24th through the 26th, and the Cubs the 28th through the 30th. So they have a very tough schedule also. It's going to be really interesting. This is going to be one of the most exciting last couple of weeks in
Yeah, every season in every division
in memory.
In every division in the National League and in a couple divisions in the American League, there really is a legitimate race going on. And then the wild card race just adds to the whole drama of the thing. And the shuffling around the position and who's going to host, who's going to go on the road, who's going to start in this game, winner take all.
There could potentially even be a three-way tie
For any of which these. Would necessitate a 163rd regular season game to break that tie.
Right. But, okay, so there are a lot of different scenarios. So if, like, two teams tie for best record in the league or wild card, then they go to the whoever had the better head-to-head record, right? And then they would get home field. But for the wild card, say the Cardinals and the Rockies were the only two clubs, right, in the wild card position. And they had the identical records. They would not play an extra game to determine who gets home field advantage in the wild card game. It would go to the team with the better head-to-head record. The Cards are beating them, just for instance, 5-2. So it goes to head-to-head record, and then it goes to intra-division record. And then, I don't even know. It's crazy.
Common opponents?
Maybe. Yeah, probably. It gets super deep. It's crazy.
Well, what is the record of the Cardinals and Rockies?
The Cardinals are they both have 81 wins. Like, if the season were to end now.
Well, what are their records head to head against each other?
Oh,
what?
The Cardinals 5-2.
Cardinals are 5-2. Okay. Yeah. You so weren't just pulling that thing. Okay.
I was pulling. Yeah, no. I mean, yes and no, but no. That's right. But like, if two teams tie for best record in the league also, which could happen this year as well. This would not involve any extra games. If the Cubs and the Dodgers, for example, were to win their divisions outright and finish tied for the best record in the NL, the team with the better head-to-head record would go on. So, but it is different if it's in the same division. Then that would go to like a one game. So then there'd be 2-1 game playoffs. And that could potentially, like, okay, so if two teams tie for the division, there are several spots that could happen, but the Astros and the A's are a good example, I think, because that's very likely. I mean, it's possible. It's possible. They would play a one-game tiebreaker on October 1st. Home field advantage would go to the club with a better head-to-head record. The winner of that game would advance to the AL Division Series round, while the loser would head to either the AL wild card or go home, depending on whether they even qualify. So could you imagine getting the best record in your division and then going home because everybody else? It's kind of like if the Indians weren't in the AL Central, right? The Indians' record, they've already clinched, but they're only 83-65. I mean, the Houston Astros are 10 games more than them. It's insane.
It is quite the interesting problem. It is. There's no doubt. Potentially, there's just so many different scenarios. It's crazy. But it's less complicated in the American League because there are only just so many teams involved. Practically everyone in the American League has been eliminated except for Seattle and Tampa Bay.
Right. Well, Seattle is all but eliminated. They're about 7.5 games back.
Well, but out of a wild card.
Right.
Still seven games there. Seattle and Tampa Bay, 7 games out. Of wild card.
Oh wow!
They're still possible for them to get in. They have to play well. They have to get help, but in all likelihood, they will be eliminated. And we're just dealing with just the order and who's playing whom, when, and where for the American League. And just 5 teams looking like Boston, Cleveland, Houston, New York, and Oakland, and some. Order. So it's unlikely. Unlikely. As good as Houston was and defend and has been all year, defending World Series champions and all, it is possible that they will have that one game wild card and go home.
Mm-hmm. That's crazy. Well, the one game playoff or the one game wild card?
The one game wild card.
Yeah.
One game, one game playoff to see who's going to win the division between Oakland and Houston. Well, neither team are actually going to go home. The loser is actually going to go and then play the one game wild card
right.
before they actually officially go home.
Unless
Tampa Bay and
right.
Seattle come out of nowhere yeah. and. Play strong baseball for these last 2 weeks.
Which is, you know, entirely possible too, I guess. But probably not likely. Anyway, it's going to be good. But there still are a lot of questions. Like, of course, obviously, Judge, I think he's even quoted, he said, talking about his wrist, you know, he got a right wrist fracture. But he said it's still healing. It takes a while for the bones to heal. Once that heals, that'll be probably the offseason by the time it starts feeling 100%. And Justin Turner was saying the same thing. He was just interviewed recently because he had virtually the same injury to start the season. When he got hit by a pitch in spring training, he was out for 6 weeks. And he said even when he came back, it was took a little while before he got his swing.
Well, yeah.
Before he wasn't late on fastballs, which is...
The swing, it's literally, it's one of those things. It's all in the wrists.
Yeah.
That pronation of the wrists when... As the swing is happening, is the genesis of a whole lot of power.
Yeah,
and if you don't have the strength in those wrists, you're not going to have a strong swing.
Especially the reaction time and everything, because it's everything. Yeah, especially when you can make last split second adjustments. So Justin Turner was saying it's pretty much the same thing. Like, you know, they say 6 weeks, but really it's going to be more like 10, maybe even more. So we don't even know if Judge will be ready to go. And could the opposing pitchers exploit that? Just pitching high inside fastballs the whole time.
Absolutely.
He's not going to be able to catch up with anything. And you could like rattle his hands a little bit too, you know, get him a little, some bees in the hands. And oh, man. But so, and there's also, look, the Cardinals, I'm not even really looking at them too much, but they're right there. You know, they're right there in it, especially if they beat the Dodgers today. But is Carlos Martinez really, what's his role going to be? Is he going to be a reliever? It's just kind of the same thing like with Chris Sale. It's really, really weird because he was their best pitcher for a couple of years there. But now, hey, it's not really looking so good. There's a lot of weird question marks in the air, you know. But I don't know, especially like the Dodgers offense, right? I mean, they've scored 3 runs or fewer in 9 of their last 15 games. But they've also scored at least 8 runs 4 times in that span. So it's like the Dodgers need to spread it out a little bit more. But still, I don't know if you saw that game yesterday.
Well, they've still got a plus 151 run differential.
Yeah, that helps.
And yeah,
and
Puig this last weekend has gone off.
He
5 home runs in 24 hours.
Yeah.
That's
pretty
impressive.
He hit 3 yesterday. And his second home run, actually, was the hardest hit by a... Hardest hit home run by a Dodger in Statcast era, basically, since they've been recording it. Did you see that second home run? It was laser.
I was not able to watch that game yesterday.
That ball left the yard. I mean, it was...
It got out in a hurry.
I've seen, like, singles to the outfield get there before that home run. That thing was gone. The Dodgers also got home runs from Machado and Bellinger that day. It was a 17-4 route, I'm pretty sure.
It was huge.
Dodgers have homered in 23 consecutive games. In their last 4 games, in which they won all 4, they've scored 37 runs. They had amassed 29 runs in the first 3 games of the series against the Cardinals. They're going to be playing today, I think, at 5 o'clock, so that'll be really interesting to see. Machado also got his 500th and 501st RBI of his career with his first inning homer. And then he had actually, like, trade the fan for... He gave him a baseball bat so he could take that ball. He said he was going to give it to his mom or something. I don't know. 500 RBI, so that's pretty good. So the Dodgers need to spread it out a little bit. I mean, that's the problem with everybody, I guess. Maybe not everybody. The Dodgers are leading in home runs, so second year in a row. But if they could do that, then it wouldn't really make this last stretch that much more dramatic. Hopefully they could just go on a 15-2 stretch here. That'd be pretty nice, right? Is that wait? What's maybe the date if you're today? A Dodger fan, 10-2, I guess. Maybe if you're a Dodger, yeah. Well, Alex Wood is back in the bullpen again, and Ross Stripling is going to be. Looks like he's going to be getting the start today. This is the finale of the 4-game series tonight at 5 against Waino, Adam Wainwright. Man, he's coming back. He's making his second start since coming off the 119 stint on the DL. Wainwright, he's got a 4.7 ERA. You know, he's definitely not what he used to be, but we can see. We'll see what happens. Hopefully the Giants win today. And, you know, once you make that happen, once you start getting some good juju in the air, right?
Well, yeah.
Well, yeah.
I'm doing what I can, you know? It's a struggle sometimes.
Now, you were looking at Juan Soto, and he was having some crazy... Well, so, actually, Acuna is putting up some insane numbers. But Juan Soto was the youngest...
Not far behind, yeah.
He's the youngest person in history to steal 3 bags in 1 game. He beat... he's 19 years old, and I'm sure you can guess who the second youngest was, or is now who the youngest was.
Oh, well, gee, could that be our friend... Ricky?
Yeah, that would be Mr. Ricky Henderson. He had the previous record holder when he was 20 years old, 241 days. But Soto is the first teenager. He's 19 years old, 325 days, but still. But entering yesterday, Soto only had 2 steals on the year and never swiped more than 5 in the minors, but he had 3 in 1 game. But anyway, yeah, Acuna, well, definitely rookie of the year.
100%. Well, we talk about steals and Ricky Henderson. You know, the era of the steal is gone.
Yeah, it's gone.
Now we've discussed that. However, interesting stat. The Yankees steals record holder, the team record holder for steals for the New York Yankees, is now held by Derek Jeter.
Jeter, right.
And that is...
Makes sense. He played with the Yankees his entire career.
The record now is 358. The previous record was 326. Who held that record?
Well, I wouldn't have thought Ricky Henderson, but since we're talking about it, I'm going to say Ricky Henderson.
And it is Ricky Henderson. Ricky Henderson played for the Yankees from 1985 to 1989. And in that time, stole 326 bases. That was 596 games he stole 326 bases to get to the same number.
Jesus.
To get to the number one more than Ricky Henderson's. Yeah. Derek Jeter played 2,343 games.
Jesus Christ. Yeah, so, the Ricky Henderson stats are outrageous. He's easily one of the...
took him 4 times as long to steal the same amount of bases.
That's nuts. So I guess if Ricky Henderson plays for any team for like 4 or 5 years, he's just going to hold their record for stolen bases.
Yeah, well, he's the greatest base stealer there is. There's no doubt about it.
That ever was and ever will be. There are certain stats or records we talk about. Oh, will they, won't they? Could it ever be broken? Some pitching stats never will be, like wins. So that'll never be broken. But the stolen base one, that's got to be the most obvious. That's got to be the most, like the furthest one. Nolan Ryan's career strikeout record is pretty untouchable. Also, we've talked about that before. But speaking of old men, David Wright, you see this? He's coming back for one last game, it looks like.
I saw that, yeah.
It's going to be at the end of this month, I guess, right? Or toward the end of this month. What can he do? He can't do anything, right? This is more like a token, right?
Probably just to make the last appearance, tip the cap to the crowd, take last couple swings in Mets uniform and say goodnight.
Is he going to do like Ted Williams and just get a home run his last at bat?
Why not?
Yeah.
Of course, you know, it was David Wright who got very frustrated at Citi Field because his balls were dying right there at the warning track.
Yeah, well, that's, you know, you got to eat some steak and do some push-ups, bro. All right. Edwin Encarnacion, that was got a little scary. He got an ankle sprain. He rolled his right ankle running the bases yesterday also. That's, you know, that could spell a little bit of trouble. He's just a DL, just a DH. He's still another 30 home run guy, just like Nelson Cruz. It seems like every year in recent memory, it's insane. Now, he doesn't have the batting average as Cruz, but, you know, anyway. And that brings us to the Ignoble Award of the Week, and that would be Chris Davis with a C, of
Chris
course.
Chris Davis with a C, yes. Yeah.
Chris Davis with the C, yeah.
Historically bad Baltimore Orioles team. Sure.
Well, he joins the Adam Dunn Club. Now, this is a very exclusive club, the Big Donkey Club. Now, Adam Dunn is almost like Ricky Henderson in that he's probably the most fascinating baseball player of all time. I mean, if you're just looking at stats, I mean, we could do an entire episode based on Adam Dunn's
stats. Yeah, well,
stats.
You know, we got a long offseason, so we can mark some of these down and
unbelievable.
Do some of this.
We could have a Ricky Henderson episode and an Adam Dunn episode. Insane. Just do a little dive, and then it'll turn into a deep dive. But do a little dive on Adam Dunn's stats if you're ever home and you think you're bored. There's no such thing as boredom, so go look at that. Anyway, Chris Davis joins the Adam Dunn Club. Chris Davis is having one of those years in Baltimore that seem impossible. But, hey, it's Chris Davis, right? Chris Davis has 178 strikeouts. His batting average is 174. So how many hitters in the history of baseball have managed to whiff more than their batting average?
Well, let's see if you're calling it the Chris Dunn or the Adam Dunn Club. I would imagine just one.
Well, there are two.
Oh, okay.
Adam Dunn is in the top, the first two. He did it twice.
Okay.
But Mark Reynolds did it in 2010. He hit 198 and he had 211 strikeouts.
Wow.
But Adam Dunn's 159-177 season and is also back-to-back seasons, his 204-222 season.
Wow.
Pretty brutal. So there is still hope yet for Chris Davis. But chances are he's not gonna raise his average 4 points without striking out once. I don't see that.
I can't exactly pinpoint when the Orioles stopped trying. But at some point, they just stopped trying this year. I mean,
it was probably when they got what's his name? Cobb. When they got Cobb, the pitcher, and he just proceeded to shit the bed time again. I think they figured, hey, we're gonna take a chance. We're gonna get this guy. He might do good. He wasn't very good on Tampa, but he had some sparks of good seasons, kind of like Nathan Eovaldi for the Yankees. They were hoping he'd be an Eovaldi. He wasn't, and of course Britton was out. And look, Adam Jones is getting older, and Machado. Well, actually, Machado had the best season of his career, but yeah, Chris Davis. I mean, there's not a lot going on there, you know. Anyway, so Joey Gallo is also chasing the Big Mac Award. It was just. So last year, Gallo became the third man in history to join the More Homers Than Singles Club.
Hmm.
This is not as ignoble.
It's not as ignoble. And
certainly not.
An interesting list.
But it is a weird stat. It's very strange. He had 41 home runs last year, 32 singles. It's insane. The other men in that club.
Well, this I think we're going to start seeing this more and more.
You're right.
With the shifts and the emphasis on launch angle.
That's true. And the fact that guys don't care about striking out. So
right.
It's almost like they don't even want the single. It's really strange. Or they don't want to be bothered learning how to hit singles when they
gone are the days of a walk is as good as a hit. Now it's all or nothing.
It's pretty strange. So, but there are two men in that club, the More Home Runs Than Singles. I already named one, of course, Big Mac. Can you, what do you got? What are you feeling? What do you think?
I want to say something like Barry Bonds.
Ding,
on that
ding,
list.
Ding. You are two for two today. Wow. It is Barry. The reason I call it the Big Mac Club is because Joey Gallo could do it 2 years in a row. And Big Mac's the only person to do it 2 years in a row. He did it in 98 and 99, the years he broke the home run record, or at least the first year. Because the first year he hit 70, the second year he hit 65. But he only had 61 singles in 98 and only 58 singles in 99. Now, that's still a lot better than Joey Gallo's 32. Yeah. That's terrible.
And I believe when Barry Bonds did it, he had quite a number of doubles as well.
Probably. Oh, I'm sure. I mean, Bonds was doing it during one of the most epic stretches of batting history. But Joey Gallo this year has 36 home runs. He has 37 singles. So he hasn't done it yet. And if the season were to end now, he wouldn't have done it. But the chances are good.
Still 2 weeks left of the season. Yeah. So he's got a fair number of at-bats. He can a few home runs and not get a few more singles.
It is weird because he is obviously Mr. Homer no single, but he started the season, at least in April. He had a 12-single April, along with 8 homers. But then he got just 3 singles in both June and July. I mean, how is that even possible?
I don't know.
Pitchers get more singles than that. Well, maybe not every pitcher, but still.
Some do.
Pretty insane. Pretty insane. Now, that's, I don't know. Does that bring us to last week's trivia question? I think it does.
I think it does, too.
What you got for me?
Well, of course, last week's we already...
Yeah, please remind me, because we do have a couple answers, but please...
We do have answers this year, or this week. This year? This year. We alluded it to earlier, involving Francisco Lindor and Jose Ramirez.
Right. Teammates, that's right. Yeah, read the question again for me, please, if you can.
The question is...
last week's trivia question.
The Lindor and Ramirez were each on a pace to hit 90-plus extra base hits this season.
Jesus. Each?
Each.
Wow.
Both of them having 90-plus.
Unbelievable, yeah.
It has only happened one time in baseball history.
Pair of teammates.
That a pair of teammates hit for 90 or more extra base hits in a single season.
Right. Okay. Now, I have an idea.
So, who were those teammates?
All right, so we got a couple emails here. It's been a couple weeks, so we do apologize. Thank you for listening again. Remember to email us at baseballshowpodcast@gmail.com. Leave the answer on the Podomatic website. Leave it on the Facebook page. It's all good. We'll see it. We'll see it, I'm sure. So we got from Tyler T, or maybe it's just Tyler with an O. I don't know. From San Diego, hey, says, "Oh, Marison Mantle. Hey, that's what I was thinking."
Marison Mantle. Yeah, Marison Mantle would be a great
61 season.
Yeah, it's not a bad bad guess, but it's not true. No. I think you're in the right direction, but wrong season.
Okay. I got it. Yeah. I got it. All right. Sorry. Look up Cactus Leaguer 69. I kind of like that one. Says Bash Brothers, Maguire Canseco.
Yeah, another good guess. That's pretty good. That was a great season. Yeah, they were.
That's a pretty good answer.
In Bash Night, but no.
That's not what I was thinking. No. You pretty much gave it away. But
I think probably. I thought that someone was going to get this because I don't know. It limits. It's a very tough, but you have to think about two of the greatest hitters of all time.
And by the way, email us. Don't be afraid. You know, we get thousands and thousands of emails. We do. But we do read them all. So let us know. You know, do you want to win? Do you want to be
take,
a winner?
Take a stab. There are no bad there are no bad answers.
Well, there are. There are wrong answers.
Bad answers.
Hey, somebody's got to
win. All answers are good. Not all answers are correct.
Okay. Anyway, so that's it. No, that's all right. So, but my guess, now that you more or less gave it away, Garrigan Ruth.
Absolutely. 1927 Yankees. Bronx Lou Gehrig Bombers. Had 117 extra base hits.
Jesus.
Babe Ruth had 97.
Good Lord. In an era where, like, if Babe Ruth didn't exist, Lou Gehrig would be the greatest player of all time. But yes. Since his teammate also had an entire pitching career, he gets sort of lost. He doesn't get lost in the fold, but you ask an 8-year-old if they know Babe Ruth, they'll probably, well, I don't know, maybe an 8-year-old nowadays probably might not, but Lou Gehrig probably not. They should. If you are good parents, you will show your kids the pride of the Yankees. Yes. If you are bad parents, you won't, even if you hate the Yankees, which, you know, most of us do, but that movie is still incredible. And
it is. Amazing. And you have to acknowledge that the Yankees were a great team for a long time.
I don't have to acknowledge that, but I will admit it. What do you got for me this week?
So this week's trivia question is bias to the West Coast.
Ooh, finally.
So there is...
Yeah.
There is an old stadium that no longer exists in this part of the world where...
The
coldest, windiest place on earth. And no, I'm not talking about Siberia. I am talking about Candlestick Park.
The stick.
It's where I saw my first major league game, and I saw many major league games there. I saw many Giants Dodgers games there, and
lost your virginity there. Sure.
Oh. Good memories, anyway.
It's a cavernous park.
It was a cavernous. Talk about foul territory to give. But there is.
That's not the trivia question.
It's not the trivia question. I haven't asked the question yet. But the question here is the question. There is one player left playing who played at Candlestick Park. Who is that player?
There is one current
active player this season.
There's only one left.
That played in Candlestick Park. Candlestick Park was retired 19 years ago. 1999 was the last year of Candlestick Park. And one active player still remains that actually played at the stick. Who was that player? Wow. And for a bonus, what was his batting average?
Ooh, what was his batting average? Bonus.
At the stick. Batting average at the stick.
Okay, this has got to be... I'm narrowing it down in my head, actually. Now, you're not saying position,
just one player.
No extra hints. All right. Email us at baseballshowpodcast@gmail.com.
Find us and like us at Facebook at West Coast Bias Podcast.
Or find us and hate us. But either way... Figure it out. Find us, all right? Drop us a line. Hate mail isn't, you know, we don't want it. But hey, why does somebody get the answer right? Somebody give us the right
Someone's got to know this.
Come on. Gehrig? Ruth? Come on, all right?
That was 27 Yankees. That was a gift.
That was a gift. Anyway, from San Francisco, California, I am Adam Nelson.
And I am Samuel Paul. Baseball is life. The rest... just details.
Go watch some baseball.